The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Great to be with you as always. I spent a very interesting latter part of this week looking closely at some of the records and some of the details of the January 6th Liz Cheney Select Committee. And I don't have much to say yet, but I will have a lot to say soon. It's amazing what happened. You talk about a propaganda effort, abuse, what I would say abuse of government, abuse of taxpayer dollars. The Liz Cheney Select Committee really took advantage of their position and tried to propagandize the American people. And just it's a scandal. It should be a bigger scandal. So we'll get to that coming up in the next, probably in the next week or so. I want to get some more work done on that, but I want you to know I'm digging into that. It's not, it's a big focus right now. But first, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about something else for a moment, shall we? Shall we talk about China? And what I want to talk to you about is whether people are serious about taking on the threats to this country. And so let me explain to you what you need to know today is the Biden administration is sending every signal that they're not serious. If the Biden administration was serious, we would have already banned TikTok, the communist Chinese owned, the communist Chinese operated, the communist Chinese brain science forming entity, TikTok, that has hundreds of millions of views a day. Over the, I think it's 30, 40, 50 million Americans are on there, more than that, maybe. And they're being shaped and they have all these things that, the Chinese communist TikTok admits that they have a button that's called a heat button. They turn up the heat on a topic and that topic becomes a big deal. And so we have a communist regime, which has influence over, especially our kids. So we would be serious if we banned TikTok. We're not. We have a Harvard professor who is sentenced now for lying about his ties to China. He's sentenced to like 10 minutes, no jail. 2 days he was in jail, that's enough, and then fined a bunch of money. Now, I don't know that I hate the idea of, less jail time for people like that. I mean, I don't want to be too over the top in general, but I do want to point out that when somebody does something nonviolent, but it is objectionable to us, and of the scope that it's a sort of, if you're like me, you think that a professor at a university like Harvard who is working for the communist Chinese regime and lying about it, that's a little more serious than say he earned a little extra money working, for an American business and he didn't report it on his taxes. When you're hiding something from the American government and your taxes that's from the communist regime, it's a little bit more of a scandal. I'm not saying it's treasonous. I am saying it's getting closer. And I am saying that what are the chances that the communist Chinese regime is paying money to Harvard professors to talk about the communist Chinese regime is paying money to Harvard professors to work for them, to promote them, to make things happen. And the professor's lying about it. Why does the professor need to lie? Because he doesn't want to reveal that. He doesn't want to reveal that he's compromised in that way. But do you really think that the communist Chinese regime at this point, with everything else they've shown, do you really think that they have, that they're not doing other things? That they're not paying other people, that they're not developing spies and others. You know, the Chinese regime calls this the Thousand Talents Plan. It's a program designed to go ahead and find people who have foreign technology and intellectual property and get them to work in China. And the Chinese admit, we all admit that the Chinese regime, when you go to China and you bring your laptop or your phone or anything else, and you're going to have your intellectual property stolen and you're not going to be able to get it back. You're not going to be able to get that easily solved if you get your stuff stolen. Ask a guy like Chris Fenton at the Dragon Feeder is his Twitter feed. But he wrote that book about how it's called Feeding the Dragon, about how the NBA and Hollywood and American business are in this problem where they want the markets in China. So they play ball. And then the Chinese, when they use them, they lose them. When they use you enough, then they lose you. And they basically did that to the Hollywood, is what Chris Fenton was most familiar. But, you know, the other part of this not being serious is the Biden administration changed the name of the entity that was doing the work digging into China. Trump administration and the Department of Justice called it the China Initiative. China, focusing on the prosecution of professors, the infiltration of academia. And the Biden administration said, oh, we got to stop that. Well, we got to stop that. That's mean. We're not going to call it the China Initiative. We're going to say it's not the China Initiative. It's just a general initiative. Because why? Because, well, there's people from Iran and North Korea and Russia that are infiltrating America. Does anyone seriously believe that the Iranians, the North Koreans, and the Russians are infiltrating our academia? When was the last time you heard about, you know, dozens and dozens of Russian or Iranian officials going to work or academics? Let me say it again. When was the last time you heard about officials, professors, Americans recruited by the Russians or the Chinese or the Iranians or North Koreans? Doesn't happen. I mean, maybe there's one or two. We know it's wholesale China. The Chinese regime, the communist regime, has on our campuses, they've set up these centers there. They announce the programs. They send hundreds of thousands of students, their own national students here. You don't have to go far to find evidence that the communist regime is targeting. And we're going to change the name of the department from not the China Initiative. No, not the China Initiative. We'll just call it the initiative to what? Protect higher ed? It doesn't seem serious. Maybe they didn't change a single thing about the program, but it doesn't seem serious. If you're not willing to name your enemy, your rival, the people who are a threat to you, you're not going to have much luck taking them on. And that's what it feels like with the communist Chinese regime. When it comes to the university infiltration, when it comes to the infiltration of the American government. Remember, only in the decade or so after the Soviet Union fell did we get declassified and released the documents that showed how dramatically the Soviets had infiltrated American life, especially universities, especially a government. When we got a bunch of the Kremlin stuff that was released, documents, we could see how compromised, and maybe say it better, a lot of compromising of America, but maybe more importantly, a lot of efforts to do it, a lot of money to do it, a lot of focus on it. Why wouldn't the communist Chinese be doing just what we think they're doing, which is focusing on this? They do, they would, and they do. And yet we're going to change the name of the initiative so we don't offend the Chinese. It's crazy. Got to get serious. All right. That's what you need to know right now. We'll come back in a moment. It's Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Great to check in with our old friend, Roger Stone. Roger, I was telling a story of 6 or 8 weeks before the election. I think I've told you this before, but I'll tell it again. I was in my office in St. Louis, Missouri. Phyllis Schlafly she died about 3 weeks later. I get a phone call and my secretary comes in and says, hey, Roger Stone's on the line. I said, oh my gosh, let me talk to Roger. I'd seen him at the convention, but we didn't know each other for that many years, a little bit over the time. And so Roger gets on the phone. He says, hey, down the stretch, they're going to come after Trump. They're going to come after him hard, and everybody's got to be ready. Here's a couple things we're doing, and I won't let you reveal in your memoirs and other places the things you were doing. But needless to say, when he needed it, there was Roger Stone had laid the groundwork for some of the more amazing moments down the stretch, especially around the Billy Bush video hit job and all that. So Roger Stone is always seeing a little bit further down the field than everybody else. So welcome back to the program, Roger. How are you?
Ed, it's great to be with you. I got to clarify that. People will now say, oh, when Stone knew the Billy Bush thing was coming, he reached out to Julian Assange and told him to move up. Those are all lies.
Good point. To be clear, actually, it was something that had nothing to do with Billy Bush. It just that he said they're going to cut. And Phyllis Schlafly felt the same way. They would come after Trump down the stretch in ways that we hadn't seen. And hanging on to the different groups that cared about the future of the country, including in Phyllis's case, the conservative case for Trump came out the day after she died, September 4th. She died September 5th. The book comes out in part to say to conservatives, don't be swayed by what you're going to see in the media. So, Roger, now, listen, over the last 6 years, the left has systematically removed from the playing field, from the chessboard, some of the more capable people, right? Flynn, Stone, Manafort. Manafort, I often tell the story, Manafort was the best that anybody had ever seen or thought of to run the convention, to make sure that the Cruz people and others didn't roll Trump. All these people taken off the field. Now Tucker. I mean, it's systematic, right?
It really is. My late advice to Trump was that he needed to elevate Hillary's role in the silencing of the various women who had been sexually assaulted by Bill. You can't be an advocate for women if you're terrorizing women or intimidating women. And it was Hillary who hired the nasty private detectives and the heavy-handed lawyers to try to silence Bill's victims. I understood that Hillary could not win without a disproportionate number of votes for women, and her real record needed to be exposed. To go to your question, I grieve not for Tucker Carlson, who's my friend of 30 plus years, because we both know he will land on his feet, and that the millions of people who believe him, who support him, who watch him every night, will follow him wherever he goes. What's more significant here is the last sane alternative narrative on cable news has essentially been removed. While there may be some good people left at Fox, they're going to be dictated to in terms of content. And therefore, I think this is a blow to freedom. It is a blow to the First Amendment. It is a blow to anyone, whether it is Big Pharma or whether it is January 6th, or whether it is Hunter Biden's laptop, it doesn't matter what the topic is. Tucker Carlson was a courageous and is a courageous journalist who was not afraid to reveal the truth. Now, on the one hand, cable is dying as a medium. Cable will go the way of network television ultimately. But in the short term, Ed, there are many 55, maybe 60 plus voters out there, they're not on the internet. They're not all that net savvy. They're used to turning on the television and watching Fox. And now we've been denied a vibrant voice on that platform. I think the country is going to be much poorer for it.
Another quick story, and I want to do that because I want to tell you the why to our listeners. I was offered a job with CNN. I was a contributor. They said, well, we want you to be a contributor. And I called up Roger Stone. I said, I'm going to call like four or five people that I trust to say, what do I do? And I said, what do you think? And I was nervous. And I remember, you may not remember, Roger, you said, no, take that job. Take that job no matter what, and just plan on when you get fired. You know, in other words, they're going to fire you eventually. Just like they did to Tucker. Eventually, they're going to push you out. And, you know, Roger, same thing with you. You lived your life and your career. But I mean, what they've done, and that's why I want to say StoneDefenseFund.com, Roger and his family still digging out from these lawsuits. They come one after another. Every time there's a lawsuit, I think there was one on January 6th, everybody else is sued. Then they add Roger Stone. He has to get a lawyer up in D.C. and try to push these things, get it dismissed. So if you go to StoneDefenseFund.com. And also, of course, I want to make sure people know the Stone Zone with Roger Stone every day at 5 p.m. Eastern time on Rumble, his show live there. You can check out lots of great guests. So, Roger, but now that if Tucker's out of the way and Fox is sort of, even if there's guys there that care, ladies there that care of the vision of sort of America First, they're going to pull their punches because they don't want to lose their job. So what is the future then? I mean, how are we setting up for, if in 2020 we had 51 intelligence community people lie to try to slow down the Trump juggernaut. We had Zuckerberg spending $400 million to try to cover up to get ballot harvesting and all. Now we've got $380 billion in the White House from Podesta, and we've got Tucker off the air, and everybody's pulling punches. Where does this end up?
Well, Adam, first of all, I appreciate your mentioning my legal defense fund because Hunter Biden's high-priced lawyers are threatening to sue me again simply because I have discussed information that's in the public domain. I mean, everything I know about Hunter Biden's laptop, I read in the New York Post.
Right.
And I had no role in that information becoming public, but it's public information at this point. So it's an intimidation game. I've received two formal letters from Hunter Biden's lawyers telling me that I needed to apologize and shut up. I'm not going to do either. So, yes, people can go to stonedefensefund.com because I'm going to end up in a legal fight with them. To answer your question, I think that what they are planning is a complete replay of what we saw in 2020. The same exact forces, Mark Zuckerberg particularly, federal dollars involved. I don't think we can count on there being a free, fair, honest, transparent election in every state. I honestly think at this point, given the state of the economy, gasoline prices, inflation, food shortages, the disastrous foreign policy of Joe Biden, slow walking us to the brink of World War III, an open border, which is bringing crime and pestilence and drugs into America. If we had an honest election, I think Donald Trump would win it. I just am not yet confident that that will happen. And now we have one fewer voice to criticize all of that. Tucker Carlson is no longer there to tell us the truth about anything, whether it's Big Pharma, whether it's January 6th, whether it's the upcoming elections.
We're talking with Roger Stone again. Roger Stone, you at 5 o'clock each day, the Stone Zone, 5 p.m. East Coast time. You get on Rumble, StoneZone.live, and it kicks right to it. Also, again, to say it, it's StoneDefenseFund.com, StoneDefenseFund.com. There's nobody that's been targeted as much as Roger. It's he's an add-on to everybody's lawsuits and all. And I had even forgotten as we started the Hunter Biden one. Okay, Roger. You've been vocal for a long time on Donald Trump's talent. Before a lot of people saw it, you said this guy could run and win. I mean, this is a decade or longer ago, more than that. Now you got DeSantis out there. You've got Pompeo, I guess, quit. Nikki Haley. What's the state of play? Is any of you, again, you've watched top level big league presidential politics for 50 years. What's the reality of the primary right now?
This is Donald Trump's nomination to lose. Trump is the one. I think that he will be even a stronger and better candidate and a better president than he was in his first term. And he did great things in his first term, despite the efforts of the two-party duopoly to slow down or to water down or impede his America First agenda. I think he's the only one with the courage, the showmanship, the leadership skills, the cojones, if you will, to lead an American revival. Ron DeSantis, who's my governor, I live in Florida, is not who he tells you he is. And if you believe that his position on COVID-19, for example, is different than Donald Trump's, then you're really not looking at the record, because he makes a number of specious claims about mask mandates, about the culture wars. But when you read the small print regarding Ron DeSantis, it doesn't match up with the rhetoric. So, I think this is playing out in the polls even as we speak. Donald Trump pulling out now to a massive lead. Trump's support has intensity. DeSantis is not as well known around the country. But Trump's allies, I think, are very effectively defining him for people. So it is Trump's nomination to lose. I don't think he will lose it. I think he's in a commanding position. We need to start thinking about how we're going to beat the Democrats. Despite Joe Biden's announcement today, I still don't think in the end that he will be the Democratic candidate. He can start a campaign committee today. He can file for office today. But until he files to get on the ballot in South Carolina, which doesn't happen until January, none of it's real. And in the meantime, he freezes the field. I mean, while I watch them systematically censor and cancel Robert Kennedy, this is really disturbing. He has an important message. He's challenging the globalists. He's challenging the war machine. He's challenging the governmental corporate cabal that is destroying our middle class, that has left the people behind. He's an articulate critic of Big Pharma. They just don't want to let him speak. They're not going to let him on the debate stage. They're not going to let him on the ballot. They're going to do the full Bernie Sanders on him. And I think it is really pathetic. In the end, I don't think he wins the nomination, but they're not even going to give him a fair chance to compete for it. And that's just unfair and un-American.
We're talking Roger Stone again. StoneZone.live is his 5 p.m. East Coast TV show every day, and StoneDefenseFund.com. Last question, Roger. After Watergate, after Ford's failures, we got Carter. The economy's in shambles. We've got hostages in Iran, and it was pretty dark, right? I mean, interest rates are way through the roof, and all, gas prices, there's lines for gas, and yet morning in America was around the corner. Right now, it feels pretty dark, right? It feels pretty dark. It feels like the forces of left and strange and evil are on the move, whether it's transgender or the media. But you know, it can turn, right? I mean, give me your sense of how, hey, you know, this is America, and we've got the tools and the pieces. We've just got to go do it.
Well, people find this response surprising for me, but I think we're at a time where prayer is extraordinarily important. Had I not been redeemed in the blood of the cross, I don't think I'd be alive today. I was targeted for destruction by the deep state. No, I did not lie to Congress. No statement I made to Congress hid any underlying crime. There was no Russian collusion. There was no WikiLeaks collaboration. There was nothing to cover up for when it came to Donald Trump. I was charged because they wanted to pressure me to testify against Donald Trump falsely. When I wouldn't do that, they decided to destroy me. Mm. But for the power of Jesus Christ, it would not be with you today. So the most important thing people can do is pray. God will not let America, the America we love, be destroyed. We've read the Bible. We know the forces of good prevail over the forces of evil. In every great battle in the Bible, the forces of good, the forces of the Lord are overwhelmingly outnumbered. And they are always victorious. So that may not sound like a political strategy, but we're not in a political battle. We're in a spiritual battle. And therefore, prayer right now by all Americans is the single most important thing you can do.
All right. Well, thank you. Hey, StoneZone.live. Tune in every day, 5 p.m. East Coast Roger Stone Show. He gets all the big guests and good guests. And also take a moment, go over to StoneDefenseFund.com. I can assure you I've spent a bunch of time with Roger and his folks. He doesn't. Roger, I made a mistake. I meant to ask you at the beginning. How is your wife? A lot of us followed your wife battling cancer and things. How is she doing?
She's doing extraordinarily well. She's now almost 2 years, just short of 2 years, cancer-free.
Great.
You know, the IRS and the DOJ continue to harass us in a lawsuit over our 2006 taxes. And because she is our principal family bookkeeper, she's under enormous stress in that process. But the matter will get settled. No, I did not underreport income. No, I did not hide assets. I simply don't have the money to pay them. They're suing me because I simply don't have the money to pay them.
Right.
So, but she's doing extraordinarily well.
Good.
And Ed, thank you for asking.
Good, 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 good. All right. Roger Stone, everybody. Thank you, Roger. As always, thanks for the fight and also for the inspirational message to Roger Stone. I'll put up on social media all the links to his site as well as his defense fund. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report, and time to catch up with my old friend Mark Mix. And Mark Mix has been a busy man. There's a lot happening right now. I got a text from one of his colleagues alerting me that there was a story to talk about. Of course, Mark Mix is the president of the National Right to Work Committee, almost 3 million members in that public policy organization. He's also the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, keeps him busy. And Joe Biden, among the many things people don't realize, I think, in this last couple of years, Joe Biden's presidency has been radically pro big labor. I mean, he has said before to people bragging that, hey, there's a teachers union member in the White House, meaning his wife. But in lots of ways, he is really, Joe Biden's administration has been and he brags about it, the most pro big labor government we've had in a long, long time. So, Mark, welcome back. First of all, what about the news that Joe Biden's running for reelection? How'd you feel about that?
Well, obviously, union officials here in Washington, I guess, are jubilant about that because there's more that he has to do, apparently. But Ed, thanks for, first of all, having me on and talking about these important issues. And you got it exactly right. When you talked about Biden's pledge to be the most pro-union president, it wasn't being pro-worker. It wasn't him being pro-union worker. It was being pro-big labor. You got it right. You framed it right. And that's exactly what's happened over the last couple of years with his administration. And the story just gets more difficult each day. That's for sure.
You know, Mark, we're talking again, Mark Mix, and I'll put up on social media links to his work. NRTW.org is one of the websites with that's the Legal Defense Fund there. But Mark, the newest piece of this is the next Secretary of Labor. So Julie Hsu, S-U is her last name, comes out of California. That's probably all you need to know. But more specifically, we'll get into it. But before we get to that, the first guy, the first Secretary of Labor was the Boston mayor, right? And was it Walsh, Mayor Marty Walsh? Is that his name? I'm getting it wrong, or some Irish name.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. Marty Walsh was his name.
And he came out of the labor movement. Was he pushed out? Did he go for a better job? I know he went to a big job, but did he go for a better job to get out, or was he pushed out? Was he not actually radical enough?
Well, I think that there may be something to that, Ed. You know, he was a building trades guy up in Boston. He was the Boston mayor. He basically made Boston a union town. Not that he had to work too hard at that, but the bottom line was it was a pretty good perch, and he'd been a longtime friend of Biden's. He came down to Washington. What I think, Ed, and I think your hypothesis is correct, he didn't push fast enough and far enough for the likes of organized labor and the big labor bosses here in D.C. So they had to step up their game. And, you know, the Democrats were pushing Biden to have an Asian American on the cabinet. It wasn't quite filled out from a diversification standpoint or diversity standpoint. So, you know, it's now your ethnicity that's your qualification, not your ability to do the job. And certainly with Julie Hsu, there are some real questions about whether or not she can actually do the job.
Again, our guest is Mark Mix, who heads up the National Right to Work Legal Defense Fund, and also is, of course, the president of the National Right to Work Committee, almost 3 million members over there. That's what I was going to say. I think, when I was in St. Louis and did a lot of work, I was Board of Elections chairman and all. You did have this difference between this sort of radical big labor that wanted to expand. I think that's where this Secretary Hsu comes out of. And then guys like Marty Walsh, who, although radically big labor, they want to build stuff. They actually wanted jobs. I mean, you know, over in California, where the nominee, and you'll have to update me on where the nomination for this Secretary Hsu is in the process. But out in California, they were doing this thing where they're cracking down on independent contractors, right? And you're not going to get away with being an independent contractor, small business, usually almost always solo practitioner. That's the definition of it. And they're saying, no, you got to be unionized, got to go by these rules, you got to pay these dues, you got to be part of this system. I mean, that's the stuff that really grinds this economy to a halt.
Absolutely. And really, that's one of the major issues right now in the debate over Julie Hsu's nomination. They had a hearing, I think it was last week, Ed. There's going to be a vote tomorrow in the Senate Labor Committee that's run by Bernie Sanders on whether or not she will advance to the floor of the Senate. It's pretty clear, I think, she'll get out of committee and she will end up on the floor. When they have the vote on the floor is yet to be determined, because I think they're going to have to really work a lot harder for the votes to get her passed as Secretary of Labor than they did to get her to be the Deputy Secretary of Labor. She had 47 votes cast against her on that vote. But Ed, you're on top of the news, even though you don't know it. You're absolutely right. In California, the Assembly Bill 5, as it was known and is now the law out there, basically said that if you were a photographer, if you were a writer, if you were, you know, a translator, someone who had an independent job and you were kind of hired for one-off jobs and you did this stuff, even a musician or even an owner-operator truck driver, that somehow that status was not appropriate and you had to be an employee. And Ed, your spider instincts are great, because independent contractors can't be unionized, but guess what? Employees can. And so AB 5 made a change in the definition of who could be an independent contractor and what that was. And basically the drive was to convert these people into employees, and how it manifested itself in the ports, for example, at Long Beach and Los Angeles, those two big ports out there on the West Coast.
Right.
Basically, if you were an independent operator running trucks off the port, you had to be an employee in order to pick up loads and deliver loads to the port after AB 5 got in. And the protest came from the truck drivers themselves against this, because a lot of these guys, as you probably mentioned and knew, you know, they bought their first truck. They may have a second truck or a third truck, and it's their family members that are driving them, and they're a small business. But yet now they have to be employees. And so I think it was something like 70,000 independent owner operator truck drivers left California and stopped doing business there because of what Julie Sue was the architect of when she was the Secretary of Labor out there in California.
We're talking again with Mark Mix about the state of this nomination for Secretary of Labor. Mark, more broadly, pulling back up for sort of above one appointment. I know one appointment can be, you know, massively influential, but how do you see the economy right now? I mean, we got a lot of headwinds, right? With inflation, we've got changes in the information, economy. How are you feeling about the economy? What are your members seeing and feeling?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. And I got a note from one of our friends in a particular state just yesterday. And he was saying, you know, we can't find anyone to work. And you'd think that if that was the problem, that things would be going relatively well. But the reason why they can't find anyone that wants to work is because the government's been taking care of people for the last, you know, 3 years, basically, or the last 2.5 at least. And that goes to the Julie Sue nomination as well. One of the other issues dealing with this nomination is the fraud and the misrepresentation that went on out in California while she was in charge. Something like $30 to $40 billion in fraud, where money was going to murderers and Russian cartels and just absolute, you know, pranksters and thieves and fraudsters in California. And, you know, she's coming back here to basically has been nominated to run an organization that's the mothership of all that stuff. And so I think, you know, the economy has this, there's this drag that we're beginning to feel, and I'm beginning to see it here at Right to Work. Our folks are very generous, but we're the disposable part of disposable income. And so the way we see it, things are slowing down a little bit. And I think it probably is going to get a little bit worse. And, you know, Joe Biden would have us believe that his energy policy has nothing to do with high energy prices, that unbelievable government spending has nothing to do with inflation, and that their border policies have nothing to do with crime and fentanyl. So I don't know what to believe, but, you know, you kind of see it with your own eyes, Ed.
Mark Mix, our guest again. Mark, you mentioned something there at the end. How do we even process the problem of the border in terms of the impact on labor? I mean, I know you and your long career, you know, and you've been somebody, part of the sort of mindset of your work is, hey, let people figure out how to work for what they're working for. Don't make them pay dues when they don't want to be a part of it. Don't make them be mandatorily in unions if they don't want. If they want to, fine. You know, but kind of make America is you figure it out, and you figure entrepreneurial stuff, sometimes big business. We got millions and millions and millions of workers coming into our system, and it's not even that we're regulating. I don't want to sound like I'm calling for regulation. We just don't even know up from down in the economy. How do we handle that?
You know, it's interesting, Ed, you mentioned that, because if you go back into history, back in time, back to maybe the 1980s, even 1970s, and certainly at that point, it was organized labor that was one of the biggest, you know, opponents of kind of this immigration process. And frankly, because they were trying to protect the jobs of rank and file union members across the country. Now, interestingly enough, union officials are some of the leading proponents of the so-called open borders policy that we're seeing. And I think that's a reflection of the change in the workplace from, you know, manufacturing jobs that were exported after Bill Clinton, who was a union favorite, started, sending manufacturing companies overseas. But now the unions are trying to organize kind of the lowest level of the service economy and other industries that, you know, will provide dues revenue. But in order to do that, they have no problem with a border that seems to be wide open. I know rank and file union members do, absolutely, but union officials don't. And those are the folks that are backing Joe Biden and this crazy policy that really as you mentioned, Ed, is causing real trouble and is will cause more trouble for the American workforce.
Well, and as you know, Mark, I mean, the thing is that one of the worst parts about this is that everybody says play by the rules and you get ahead. And then you look up and you say, wait, they're ignoring the rules. I mean, they're enforcing this set of rules and that set of rules and demanding this set of new rules. And as to the basics of the law, forget about whether we don't have to get into anything dramatic like January 6th or anything. Just go to the basics of a border and then they'll demand of businesses that you be penalized for employing workers who are not e-verified when the system can't even manage the border itself. It's worse than confusing, but it looks like, as we've seen with this nomination of Joe Biden, Julie Hsu, to be Secretary of Labor, that's what they want. This isn't a miscalculation or a malfunction. It's a feature of their people. It's a feature of their policies. So, Mark Mix, let me say thank you. I've got to run. It's National Right to Work Committee, almost 3 million members of that public policy organization. He's also the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. If you go to nrtw.org, there's a lot of there. NRTW, that stands for National Right to Work, nrtw.org. Thank you, Mark, for your time.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
All right. Mark Mix, everybody. I'll put up a couple of links to the stories about this nomination. Couldn't be worse. Actually, it really couldn't be worse. At least when Biden was picking his friends, like the former mayor of Boston, it sort of directionally, the guy wanted the economy to work and things to happen. When it comes to this California bureaucrat who is now about to ascend to be Secretary of Labor and probably will get through, it couldn't be worse. So, all right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, here's the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
An emergency appeal reached the U.S. Supreme Court from West Virginia, which is trying to safeguard girls' sports teams against biological males pretending to be girls. A well-reasoned federal district court decision upheld West Virginia's law against a constitutional challenge on behalf of an 11-year-old, but then a majority Democrat panel on the Fourth Circuit suspended the good law. This case is being called the most important yet in the transgender movement, which is suddenly invading nearly every school and government program. Chief Justice Roberts ordered a response to West Virginia to be filed promptly, and amicus briefs in support of West Virginia's necessary law quickly poured in. The lower federal courts held that transgenders are entitled to a heightened form of protection under the Constitution, and that issue quickly moved before the Supreme Court. 2 years ago, the Supreme Court ducked a case concerning an attempt by a school board to keep biological boys and girls out of each other's restrooms. In that lawsuit, arising from Gloucester High School in Virginia, the Supreme Court denied a petition for certiorari on this issue of forcing transgenderism on schools. That handed transgender activists a victory by leaving intact the Fourth Circuit ruling against the school board, which declared transgender conduct to be a new constitutional right and a Title IX federal right in schools. Wary parents should be careful not to dismiss this epidemic of youth transgenderism as a harmless fad that will fade from popularity like bell-bottom pants. Leftist gender ideology is a cancer that is poisoning the minds of our youth in ways that they may never recover from. By the left's own definition, affirming transgenderism in young people necessitates allowing them to have access to dangerous hormone pills and surgical mutilation of their bodies, which will leave them sterile. Parents are ultimately responsible for the well-being of their children, and thus it is up to parents to fight against gender ideology. No, your school district is not too conservative to fall for this. Do not wait until it's too late to raise your voice against this insanity.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. The liberal agenda is corrupting classrooms in colleges and schools across the country. If you're a parent, teacher, or administrator who really cares about our children, we promise to keep you informed at phyllisschlafly.com. And let us hear from you at phyllisschlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Well, Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Hey, you may have noticed they desperately wanted it to be big time press, but the proponents of the Equal Rights Amendment, which was has long since died. The ERA was passed in the early 70s. It had a time limit on it. The limit passed. It never so it expired. It never passed. Even Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, said the ERA is dead. The one that passed is dead. You'd have to start again. It's not going to happen. But every now and then, and you got to love the Democrats, every now and then the Democrats will bring it up to try to make the far left of their party feel happy. And so I think Thursday they brought it up in the U.S. Senate. Now, they brought it up in the U.S. Senate and it failed. OK, it failed to get enough votes to break cloture. So it died. Now, it was always going to die. And the fun thing is the ERA proponents who wanted this to be done, the time to have done it, if they were serious, was when the Democrats had control of the House and Senate and they could have done it. And Chuck Schumer, of course, didn't really want to do it. So what he wants is to make people feel on the far left like he cares and that they're going to do something like this. But he does it in such a way that it's guaranteed to die. And then he goes out and rails against the conservatives and blah, blah, blah. So it was never going to happen. The great thing is it brings up all all the details of Phyllis Schlafly, the late Phyllis Schlafly, my boss, who beat it back so soundly. It brings up all those details again so that people can realize how amazing she was, how talented she was, and how she won against all the odds. And that's kind of fun. But it really is silly to watch. Now, one of the details of the Equal Rights Amendment, when it was fought, people like Phyllis Schlafly said out loud, look, if you put in the Constitution, the Equal Rights Amendment, you're going to make it so women's access to abortion must be paid for, must be mandatory. That's right. That would have been a constitutional change. It would have overridden any change like Dobbs. There was Phyllis argued back then, you're not going to be able to keep men out of women's rooms because you're not going to be able to discriminate on the basis of sex. And she predicted, she said there'll be transgender issues back then, and on and on and on, definition of marriage, other things. Well, Phyllis won by keeping it out of the Constitution, and it's still out of the Constitution. But on a lot of these issues, the country has either changed their mind or by judicial fiat in the case of marriage, it's been done. But certainly the Constitution was protected, and it was protected again this week. So the ERA failed, and of course Democrats were lying to their supporters, trying to tell them it was important to push, and it was all a lie and misdirection, so that they'll continue to support them and say how great they are, even though they actually didn't deliver. So there you have it. All right, we have to run. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you to the great Noah Dingley, our producer, Ryan Hyde, our associate producer. We'll be back next week. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you then.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.